Gopal Champu, Uttara section, chapter 16, Rukmini's marriage. After the evening session, Snigdhakanta began speaking the next morning. Another topic in Nanda's assembly, lit by the smile from Krishna's moon-like face. When the many messengers were going and coming in this way, two other messengers arrived. As in previous cases, they announced the good condition and gave information. There was astonishing news from the most auspicious city called Vanamali. Nanda said, "O messengers, please describe this completely." They said, "When some days had passed in complete happiness, one day while your son was sitting somewhat indifferently on a cot in a room made of jewels with a vacant mind, a brahmana who acted as if he had been cheated by evil men quickly approached. Krishna had great faith in the person who had arrived because he was a brahmana and according to proper conduct offered him respects, worshipped him by washing his feet and offering other services, fed him tasty food, gave him a bed, and held his feet for service. After inquiring about his well-being, he asked why he had come. Being shy, the brahmana was silent for some moments and then spoke. There is a king named Bhishmaka living in Kundina in Vidarbha state. He is the abode of great fame. You know him. He is famous for being born in a famous dynasty. He has some demonic sons like Rukmi and a daughter named Rukmini. Friends who know the king's heart were thinking of offering her to you, but Rukmi has deceived them and has attempted to give her to Shishupal. This praiseworthy daughter, hearing of your qualities and confirming them through the scriptures, desires to accept you as her husband according to her impressions. What is to be said about her desire to accept you? She has accepted you already in her mind. Having done that, it is continually painful for her to see other marriage arrangements. Giving up shyness, she has sent me to you. She says this, 'One should not be ashamed for a righteous cause. Shame because of sin or death is low. Those women are fortunate who worship Krishna because of attraction, giving up local custom and dharma.'" Krishna began to think, "It is true. She has no alternative. Narada, who gives happiness to all, has already said that she is attracted only to me. Let us leave that news of her attraction for now. Fixed in the instructions from saints like Narada, she cannot give up the scriptural principle of being fully dedicated to me. She can even give up her body. I think she cannot reveal her desires for me to her parents unless she knows my agreement to marry her. If she knows I accept her, she will live. If she understands I will not accept her, then she will give up her life. This constant nature of mine manifests at all times. When someone shows anurag, love for me, I cannot reject them. Because of the extraordinary emotions in my heart caused by the wealth of prema in Braj, I have no inclination for her. But now she is attempting service with great pain. My heart does not know what to do. I must ask again for news." He asked, "What are the details of what she wants?" The brahmana said, "There is nothing, but she shyly gave me this letter." Krishna said, "Please read it." The brahmana spoke in a choked voice. "Krishna, most beautiful in the universe, your famous qualities have entered my heart through my ears. What to speak of hearing about you? On seeing your form, you've entered my heart. O lotus-eyed Krishna, my mind becomes absorbed in those qualities. Those qualities combine and remain in my mind, which thinks of you as the only goal. By those qualities, my heart gives up shyness and constantly follows you. O Lord, Let these qualities which destroy all suffering and your form which bestows all results not be given to me, though I desire them. But I do not want to see other women in such a position. What intelligent woman with good family and qualities would not worship you? For there is no one equal to you in qualities, and you attract the minds of all the people in the three worlds. Most worshipable Krishna, because you attract all, I have given up shyness. I immediately accept you as my husband. Shishupal cannot touch this body which has been offered to you. O lion among men, is the lioness's body fit for the jackal? I have worshipped the Lord since childhood by various types of charity to serve you. If this is not accomplished, or there is an obstacle in my worship, let my body perish, but no one else should touch my body. O Krishna, the day after tomorrow I am to be married. Come to the marriage secretly tomorrow, surrounded by soldiers. Defeating Shishupal and others, take me away when I go out to worship Devi according to the custom. If the Lord, the dust from whose feet takes away all suffering, is not pleased, let me have the benediction of worshipping Him and giving up my life for thousands of births. The people of Braj said, "Ah, this young girl has fixed her mature intelligence on a most auspicious object. She has made such a vow in the end." Some women said, "How could she be a young girl? She was intelligent, for in fear she sent the messenger." Others said, "Those of Kshatriya birth have no fear in their minds, but they teach others by being fixed in Dharma." Tell the rest of the story. The messengers said, "Understanding her deep attachment, Krishna again thought, 'What should I do now, since I must prevent her from giving up her body? And this marriage will be an obstacle for me going to Gokula. How shall I marry her?' He again considered, 'Anyway, I should kidnap her and later think about what to do.' Thinking in this way, he said to the Brahmana, 'O best of the Brahmanas, please listen with attention. Since I heard from Narada that she is attracted to me, my mind has been thinking of her constantly. It is well known that the devotees follow after the qualities of the devata they worship. But I also follow after the qualities of my devotees, just as a crystal mountain adopts the qualities of the object next to it. Therefore, she must be delivered. Later, I will consider what to do.' Thinking in this way, with anxious heart, he mounted his chariot with the Brahmana. Understanding the time of the wedding, he arrived in one night in Kundita town, in the middle of Bidarbha. He decided that he should not take permission from anyone. He did not even take Balaram because of fear and shame. Going in this way, he arrived in the evening. Arriving at Kundina, he saw the joyful marriage arranged by the king according to the wishes of his son. He then understood that Shishupal had arrived expecting to be the groom. He also saw the great respect Bhishmaka gave to the groom as appropriate to the occasion, and saw Jarasandha and others who had assembled to fix the proposal. Nanda in fear asked, "How did my son remain so close to them while being alone?" The messengers said, "O Nanda, you certainly know your son's power, which considers millions of enemies to be insignificant. If a lion is alone in an elephant herd, will the lion be afraid?" Nanda said, "Did anyone follow Krishna? No one should follow him. Even Balaram did not follow him. How could Balaram, also born in the milk ocean of Braj, give up affection for him? Did not the people of Dwarka have affection for him as a relative?" The two messengers said, "Only Balaram followed. Hearing that his brother had arrived at Kundita to steal the bride, and the enemies were ready to prevent any interruption to the marriage, Balaram was overcome with affection from being born in the ocean of affection in Braj. Alarmed, he went to Kundina with an array of troops. All then thought of the difference between Balaram and the Yadus. They said, 'Prema that appears from birth is swabhava siddha, according to the nature of a person. Prema which arises incidentally is conditional. How can that artificial prema be compared with natural prema? Nanda said, "Then, what happened?" The messengers said, "When he arrived, Krishna was embarrassed. Balaram became red like the rising moon because of anger and did not speak to Krishna, thinking him to be just like a thief. He remained there, surrounding him with the troops." Nanda said in joy, "Where did the Brahmana go? Afflicted by fear that her love for Krishna would be destroyed, wondering where he was, what did Rukmini think?" The messengers said, "Understanding that any requests made at night would be useless, the Brahmana stayed awake all night thinking of auspicious subjects. Rukmini was thinking that the Brahmana would come in the evening. Thinking her aspirations were devastated, she became unsteady. The opportunity at the marriage, which she had narrated to him in the letter, did not materialize. 'I cannot waste time,' she thought. She thought of looking at the road, but could not do so. With vacant mind, she bowed her head. Controlling herself by keeping her mouth firmly closed, she closed her tearful eyes. Some time passed. She was unable to tolerate the Brahmana not returning, but her left eye, arm, and foot began trembling as an auspicious sign. With those symptoms, her mind became alert and she opened her eyes. Opening her eyes, she saw the Brahmana in front of her. Seeing him, her mind became agitated with doubt whether Krishna had come. Then she saw the joy on his face. Her mind and eyes became joyful. Becoming happy, she became cool. By closeness to the Brahmana, who was fragrant with the aroma of Krishna, Rukmini became fragrant. She experienced such strong joy within that her hair stood on end. The messengers continued. She inquired from the Brahmana in private. Asked, he explained clearly that Krishna had accepted her proposal and he had come with him on the chariot by a pleasant route. But all the articles worthy of praise that she had arranged were not suitable to give the Brahmana. In offering her head to him, when she bowed down, she made him most exalted. Rukmini's moon-like body, lit by the chakra of Krishna's acceptance words, became free from Shishupal, who was like Rahu on the seventh lunar day. Nanda said, "How did Krishna and Balaram fool the others there, and how did the king treat them?" The messengers said, "They pretended that they had come to see the elaborate marriage celebration. Hearing that they had agreed to come to his daughter's marriage, in joy the king worshipped them elaborately as suitable to guests." Nanda said, "Since he treated them only like guests with some indifference, I think that all the inhabitants of the city must have been indifferent to them." The messengers said, "No, no. The king could not show inclination to them because of his suffering condition caused by his evil son's advice. All others were unhappy with this situation. All the people gathered and drank through their eyes like folded hands the streams of sweetness from Krishna's blue lotus face, spreading constant, unlimited happiness. They said, 'Rukmini is suitable to be Krishna's wife, and Krishna is suitable to be her husband in all ways.' They said this using the word, 'certainly,' at every instance. Moreover, they said, 'Because of past, present, and future pious acts, we do not desire our own happiness, but we make this joyful prayer. O Lord of all results for all living beings, let strong, lotus-eyed Krishna accept the lotus hand of Rukmini by righteous or unrighteous means.'" Nanda and the people said in bliss, "Then what happened?" The messengers said, "After bathing in the morning and putting on her clothing, with joyful mind, as if getting permission to go to Dwarka, Rukmini then became eager to go to the Durga temple according to the instructions of her parents. After she offered them respects, surrounded by friends, her brothers' wives, mothers-in-law, wives of the family priests, servants, eunuchs, and groups of foot soldiers with swords and armor, horsemen armed with the best weapons, chief ministers on all seen elephants, processions of chariots, musicians carrying instruments, skillful dancers, sutas, mogadas, and vandis, distinguished by different colored costumes, and finally, the blissful common people watching the continuous festival. Since she held Krishna in her heart, no one could impede her. Emerging from the palace guarded by guards, she went through the city according to Vedic rules and arrived at the Dharmic Durga temple. Wishing that Krishna would destroy the enemies, she walked slowly to the temple. Rukmini worshipped Durga according to the proper method and holding her prasad mercy on her body and mind, left the sanctum, taking the hand of her friend in her hand which had the beauty of Durga's jeweled hand position, mudra. She went outside. Yogamaya made Rukmini with teeth like kunda flowers into two forms. The opposers of Krishna saw a material form. The devotees saw her as Krishna's wife. The opposers of Krishna became bewildered by Maya, and the devotees of Krishna became joyful with devotion to him. While this occurred, Krishna remained seated in his chariot higher than the rest. The bride and groom gazed at each other as if eternally related, devoid of the glance of even the best of the public. After they glanced at each other again, Rukmini deliberately delayed in order to climb into the chariot and glanced at him with the edge of her eye. Krishna positioned on his swift chariot, then took her up. Persons at a distance thought that Garuda on his flag had quickly taken her off to Dwarka. He took her and left. When he took her away, the unlimited people who had been bewildered by Maya, such as Jarasandha, came back to consciousness, awakened by the sound of Krishna's chariot. They could not understand when Krishna had come, when he left, and where he went. After considering, they began to search. Accompanied by the harsh, terrifying sound caused by the thumping of drums, the neighing of horses, the trumpeting of elephants, and the rattling of chariots, the best of soldiers began searching, following the path of the kidnapper of the king's daughter, which was strewn with the bodies of all the enemies cut down by his chariot. Their bodies torn, they became filled with affliction. Though the armies came in front of Krishna, one cannot describe them because jackals only come in front of a lion out of insanity. Though Rukmini's heart was shy from their first meeting, because of her good upbringing, she embraced Krishna's face with her eyes, since she was fearful of the enemy's strength. Though she knows my power, she is afraid because of her nature as a young girl. Krishna calmed her quickly by his words possessing increasing mercy. It is true that the enemy approached the Yadus and fired arrows at them, but they were like masses of clouds in a strong gale. The Yadus clearly saw the enemies with their quivers behind. Amazingly, the enemy did not know the position of the Yadus' limbs with their weapons. The enemy had the most valuable swords, but they were like treasures locked in a miser's storehouse. The enemy did not lament when countless foot soldiers, horses, chariots, and elephants fell in the battle. Because their bodies remained alive, they felt unequaled happiness. The piles of bodies of the terrified enemies run over by Krishna's fast chariot were like the steps to Swarga. Some, seeing the bodies with severed heads, fled far away in fear, holding their heads with their hands, thinking that their own heads may have been severed. They consoled Shishupal, whose wife had been stolen, gave up enthusiasm for fighting through the excuse that victory and defeat depend only on karma, and then left. I was defeated by Krishna 17 times, and I conquered him once. See how I remain calm. Jarasandha's words did not make anyone laugh. I was defeated the 17th time, but I defeated him the 18th time. Jarasandha was in this way mistaken about his victory. Though Rukmini had been defeated with others like a tall tree burned by a strong lightning bolt, he promised in front of the inauspicious rascals that if he did not defeat Krishna and Rukmini, he would not return. We derive some happiness from their words. They say that your son, whom Vasudeva established as his son, is a coward. They do not deny it. Krishna was satisfied with that. Nanda said, "Then what happened?" The messenger said, "Rukmi was so thoughtless, but see the cowardly state of the others. They vowed to help, but fled without a show of strength, because they had hearts of frightened deer, not hearts dedicated to the Lord." Nanda said, "Then what happened?" The messengers said, "Rukmi lamented. Giving up those who lamented their loss, he took only his own Akshahinis and went to battle. But looking behind, he found that he was his only helper. Since he could not depend on only himself, he thought and concluded that he could only talk to Krishna. From far off behind Krishna, he calls, 'Stop, stop.' But Krishna continued to move, not hearing him because the sound of his chariot swallowed the sound of Rukmi's chariot. When he heard the sound of his chariot, he stopped. Rukmi began firing abuse from his mouth and arrows from his bow. Krishna deflected all the arrows of abuse by his smile and deflected Rukmi's fury by his armor made of yogamaya. Krishna's golden arrows with feathered ends, increasing in brilliance by the competition with Rukmi, simultaneously broke Rukmi's bow and flagstaff. The arrows immediately demolished the charioteer, Rukmi's limbs, and his four horses at the same time. Rukmi watched as this happened. With difficulty, he took another bow. He released more arrows, but the same thing happened. Depressed and lamenting, Rukmi then gathered his iron club, spears, trident, shield, armor, sword, and lance to make himself invincible against the enemy. His chariot broke, and he alighted from it. Quickly making Rukmi devoid of his chariot, Krishna on his chariot approached him with great speed like Shiva. When Rukmi took up his golden sword and colorful shield in order to stop Krishna's advance, Krishna pulverized them, but not completely. Krishna wanted to break his sword and shield, deflate his joy, and cut him with his knife, but he did not kill him. Nanda said, "Then what happened?" The messengers said, "Rukmini then showed her womanly nature. Giving up shyness, she protected her brother, trying to help him out of pity. Rather than kill him because of his audacity, Krishna took the opportunity to have some fun, which he would inflict great pain on him." Everyone said, "Tell us what happened next." The messenger said, "So that the snake with deflated pride would not run away, expert, powerful Krishna tied up the deceitful man with a torn piece of cloth like Bali, so he could not get loose, as if ready to kill him. A shadow of mercy appeared in Krishna's mind because of Rukmini's pleas. Krishna then disfigured him by cutting the tough forest of hair on his head with a quick movement of his sword, making zigzag patterns left and right, as if lice were making new paths." When the Braj assembly laughed at this description, the messengers spoke again. "Please listen. Balaram felt pain for Rukmi like someone who wipes a person with a cloth when that person breaks his nose. While Krishna fought with Rukmi, Balaram and the other attendees of the wedding routed the opposing troops who caused a disturbing battle. When Krishna tied up Rukmi, Balaram was present. Seeing him bound by Krishna like someone to be killed, Balaram became touched with compassion, and taking the bonds, released them and scolded Krishna with many words. He brought Rukmini back to her normal state by giving instructions, since she was trembling because of Rukmi's plight. 'My dear Krishna, you have acted improperly. This deed will bring shame on us, for disfigure a close relative by shaving off his mustache and hair is as good as killing him. Saintly lady, please do not be displeased with this out of anxiety for your brother's disfigurement. No one but oneself is responsible for one's joy and grief, for a man experiences the result of his own deeds. A relative should not be killed, even if his wrongdoing warrants capital punishment. Rather, he should be thrown out of the family. Since he has already been killed by his own sin, why kill him again? The code of sacred duty for warriors established by Lord Brahma enjoins that one may have to kill even his own brother. That is indeed a most dreadful law." Nanda said, "Then what happened?" the messenger said. Gentle Rukmini agreed with Balaram's instructions. Rukmini thought to himself that the instructions of Balaram were more painful than being bound by Krishna. He thus felt intensely aggrieved. Nanda said, "Where did he go after this?" The messenger said, "After being freed by Balaram, he met with his remaining devastated troops in a depressed mood." Everyone said, "How could the cruel fellow, disfigured like that, go back to Kundina?" The messenger said, "Though thinking Rukmini should actually be doubly punished, Balaram, in order to protect Rukmini's honor, had him completely shaved by a barber as if he had gone on pilgrimage, and then put him on his chariot and sent him off. Holding strong enmity towards Krishna and bad intentions on his return journey, he came to his residence and stayed there. What is the use of speaking about sinful persons? Enough said." Nanda asked, "Did Krishna return to an auspicious house?" The messenger said, "After he returned, as previously, he heard news of Braj through Uddhava, and taking Uddhava's permission, sent us here quickly." Nanda asked, "Was the marriage performed?" The messenger said, No, it seemed to have been neglected. The reason was previously given. Hearing all the happy news from the mouth of Uddhava, how could Krishna marry if it were not performed by you?" When Nanda and the others were discussing in the assembly, two servants of Vasudeva from Dwarka carrying a message approached Nanda, offered respects, inquired about his well-being, and then addressed him as follows, "O Lord, Vasudeva has sent this letter." Nanda took the letter with respect and read it. "You are my friend, always thinking of my happiness. You are the root of all auspiciousness named Nanda. Embracing you, I, Vasudeva, make a request with all humility. Your son that you accept as your own, I also take as my son. We have no difference. You know that I know that. Who could think otherwise about us? Because we have the same feelings for Krishna as our son, we pray permission for his marriage just as you repeatedly pray for permission with your handwritten letters." Saying this, Nanda said, "All right, arrange to feed the two messengers. Later, we will send a suitable message." When all gathered, they considered as follows pleasantly. Since Krishna's promise to return to Braj cannot be false, he will be delayed as long as the enemy has not been destroyed. That has not yet been accomplished, but sometime in the future it will be. While Balaram is enjoying family life, it is not proper that Krishna remains in an unmarried state. For Krishna has written these sweet words to us. Now you should all return to Braj, dear father. We shall come to see you, our dear relatives who suffer in separation from us, as soon as we have given some happiness to your well-wishing friends. This statement reveals the following. One should make arrangements so that friends may be happy. This is included in the happiness of Krishna, known as a Yadu and Kshatriya. If he does not appear as a Yadu Kshatriya because of not having oneness with them, other events cannot take place. Therefore, like Vasudeva, we will pray for his marriage. Nanda wrote this message. Embracing my most affectionate son, whose beautiful face is worshipped by all happiness, I make the following request. O child, you know my heart, that I consider myself non-different from Vasudeva. For that reason, whatever you do as per Vasudeva's desire, know that it is our desire as well. What a misfortune if we are ever to think differently. How could I endure the poverty-stricken condition of your lotus face devoid of beauty? I could not endure it. Receiving the message, the two messengers carrying it left. After some days as previously, two Braja messengers arrived. After telling of the well-being of Dwarka, they told what had happened in Dwarka. Nanda asked, "After that, what happened?" The messenger said, "O Nanda, when your son saw your letter, tears washed away the writing. Later he fixed in his heart the meaning of the letter." Nanda, with tears, said, Then what happened? The messengers said, "He underwent the marriage that you had permitted. In Dwarka there was profuse music in each house, and in the heavens spreading over the high waves of the ocean with one sound competing with the others, crowded with Kunti, Yadus, Kekayas, and Kurus, as well as the people of Vidarbha, the wedding of Rukmini took place with great festivity, giving great joy." Nanda asked, "Did all the people of Vidarbha come?" The messengers said, "All came, except Bhishmaka's sons." Nanda said, "Was not Bhishmaka ashamed to come?" The messengers said, "He was ashamed. He feared being slighted by Vasudeva's group and his daughter." Nanda said, "Did all the groups of the bride and groom meet together?" The messengers said, "Yes, all matters of the wedding were performed perfectly, but without your presence, our minds remained without peace. What more should I say about the topic?" Hearing this, as previously, when Nanda's assembly became pale, Snigdhakanta concluded, "O Nanda, Krishna, whose splendid face gives all happiness, does not shine as much in the presence of his father, mother, and unlimited relatives and millions of houses with immense treasures as he does on attaining your sweet glance." Hearing this and seeing the pleasing color of Krishna's eyes, Nanda's color was restored. He embraced Krishna, and everyone's hair stood on end. Blissful on seeing Krishna, the bards of Braj began reciting, "Krishna curbed all desires because of the sweetness of Braj and considered a king's wealth to be useless. He had no desire to marry. At that time, a brahmana came to Krishna. He delivered the words of Rukmini and relished the nectar of Krishna's clever words in response. The brahmana left Dwarka joyfully, came to Kundina and told Rukmini that Krishna would come. Joyful Rukmini, desiring the wedding, offered respects to the brahmana with no fear. As a trick, she worshipped Durga during the festival in order to be qualified to accept the feet of the Lord. He shone perfectly when he took Rukmini on his chariot and made the faces of the enemies pale with lamentation. When Jarasandha and others were disinclined to fight and the enemy was defeated, Rukmini instigated a fight with Krishna. Krishna did not kill him but disfigured him by shaving his head. Having defeated Rukmini with his allied kings, Krishna went to Dwarka with Rukmini. Respected for defeating various enemies, he now resides in Braj by the desire of all. When the day's topic was finished, the evening recital began by which Radha and her friends became happy. Snigdhakanta said, "When the messengers arrived, the gopis used to gather to hear, but not all the time, because among them, only a few of their assistants were present in the assembly. Understanding the times when the topics would bring happiness to the sakis, they would bring the sakis to hear. They heard a little about the marriage with Rukmini through others. Just as Vasudeva wrote a letter to Nanda, Uddhava wrote to the gopis. Krishna decided that he would never marry among the Yadus, but if I do not marry her, she will kill herself. I do not know what to do if this happens." Understanding the situation, the gopis, afraid of responsibility for a woman's death, wrote an answer for Krishna. "We endure all difficulties arising from unfortunate karma, but we pray that Krishna's fame, like the moon, will not be spoiled by the death of a woman." When Krishna heard Nanda's letter and saw privately the letter written by the gopis delivered by Uddhava, he accepted the letter without joy. There is no use in describing this, but listen to this. "O Radha, bold because of intense love, he who gave you up because of unavoidable duties now puts you on his lap, excluding all other thoughts, and has given up his defamation. Having dissipated all pain for Radha and her friends, spreading joy to all, the two reciters went to their residence. Having attained each other, Radha and Krishna, free from all worries, embracing each other, spread most splendid joy throughout Braj.